This is RNIB Connect Radio, and as always at this time of the week, we like to catch up with Matt Stringer, the CEO of RNIB, joins me now on the line. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Stephen. Good afternoon.
Good to be back with you again. Let's talk about what's happening at RNIB this week. Lots going on, as always. I want to start off by talking about an area which is of importance, certainly in America at the moment, and even more so here next year, as we move towards local elections, regional elections, country elections, however you want to look at it. And that is, of course, accessible voting and the challenges that have been affecting a lot of people over the years trying to make their voice heard. This is something that RNIB is working on at the moment quite heavily, isn't it?
No, indeed. We just had some research we published earlier this week in a report called Turned Out, which is us sort of investigating the challenges that blind and partially sighted people have in voting. And as you said, you know, we all think of general elections, but actually in any year you're going to have sort of local elections, council elections, potentially devolved nation elections, votes for regional mayors and, you know, sort of police commissioners and all the rest of it. So, you know, averagely people would vote a lot. And, you know, one of the challenges you're blind and partially sighted is that, you know, experience of turning up to the polling booth and getting a little stubby pencil has not been well designed for blind and partially sighted people. And we've had, you know, a lot of research showing that, you know, a majority of blind and partially sighted people to varying degrees, you know, are not finding it easy or able to vote at all, and then certainly vote secretly, as you would expect. So really important research that we published this week.
Yeah, I mean, it is really important that we tackle this because it has been an issue for many years. Many blind people coming forward and saying, and in the report it's reflected, that they just don't vote. You know, the anxiety, the hassle, the challenge of going to do it, to vote, to have your voice, make your voice heard, it's just too great.
No, that's right. I mean, just give you some stats without trying to drown in those, but it does give, I think, a very stark picture. So only 1 in 10 blind voters and less than half of partially sighted voters, so 5 out of 10 in essence, were able to vote independently and in private. So, you know, if you're turning up to try to vote knowing that the system is stacked against you and you're going to be on the other side of those statistics in having to get some help, you know, it won't be a secret ballot. You know, you're going to have to explain your choice and go through a process. You know, it's really challenging. You know, 2/3 of blind people and 1/3 of party sighted people had therefore to get another person to help them to vote. And then the other part of this, which we've been working on generally, as we've spoken about many times on this radio channel, is this whole point about accessible information. Mm. You know, and sort of half of blind people reported that, you know, all the information that people send out is unreadable. So any material on the candidates or the process, you know, you just can't access that as a starter. So the system has been, you know, inherently geared against blind and partially sighted people, both understanding the process and then being able to go and sort of participate in the process.
So you can read the report. You can find it at rnib.org.uk. I would encourage you to do that. Matt, another interesting story this week from RNIB, and this is something which is a really important part of the work we do here at the charity, is collaboration work with other organisations. And this week, a big collaboration with Sense.
No, that's right. I mean, we have been I think through the pandemic, you know, particularly, but I think before that, you know, realizing that, you know, we needed to come together with other charities for a variety of reasons. I think I spoke on this program a couple of weeks ago about some good work we've been doing across the visually impaired sector with some of the big charities like Guide Dogs and Thomas Pocklington and the Visionary group of charities, to bring all our sort of firepower together, if you like, to both respond well in the pandemic and also to sort of agitate on campaigning issues. And clearly we've just talked about voting. This week we've just announced a positive tie-up that we've done with the charity Sense. And there are two dimensions, one of which is something that happened in the summer, which is that we have handed over the provision of our service at Loughborough College to Sense, which is a great fit for them actually in terms of providing or running that service. And that, you know, we've handed that over to them, you know, with great thanks, and we've got a great team there who Sense will now take over and continue to run a really excellent service at Loughborough. The other thing that more work coming our way from Sense is, you know, we have a very, very well developed, sophisticated, you know, advice service, and we will be taking in some people and some volume from Sense to put through our sort of sight loss advice service, you know, our telephony capacity and the skills that we have in that service. Because, you know, as Sense have said in the press release, we have a good understanding of the needs of customers using the service and a strong alignment in values and values and culture. And we're able to provide the breadth and depth of coverage, you know, which Sense probably weren't able to do because we have much more volume. So, you know, two examples, I think, with us and Sense working very closely together. And I think, you know, benefiting, and this is a critical point, clearly benefiting our beneficiaries in both places by having the service sort of improved and sharpened, which is great. And it's only part, as I said earlier, of a sort of direction of travel, I think, of people in a challenging sort of charity sector at the moment coming together to sort of pool resources and make the whole greater than parts.
Sounds amazing. Wonderful work there with Sense. Now, let's talk about COVID, of course. Not a week goes by we don't talk about this, obviously. It's really the only subject for many people. And certainly if you watch the news every day, then that's all we hear about, obviously. And it makes sense to have this discussion about how RNIB is coping. Of course, the news now is that London will join other parts of the UK in being Tier 2 as of the weekend, meaning that pubs will be closed, I guess, and other restrictions brought in around household mixing. How does that affect RNIB going forward? Does that change anything? You know, and in terms of the offices reopening, I know that was something you were keen to tell us about. You know, how is it possible to do that? Is it possible to do any of that?
Well, no, it's a moving goalpost every week, isn't it? I think there are some constants, though, that we're hanging on to through the autumn, I think. I mean, first of all, you know, looking after our staff and realising that we're all in for a bit more of a long haul working from home primarily is still to give people the opportunity to go to another workplace, either because they need to meet somebody or they need to have an internal sort of team meeting, or just because, you know, they're sharing a cramped flat with a couple of flatmates all working on the kitchen table and need that sort of safety net of going somewhere that's quieter and spacious and able to work, actually. So, yeah, we've done a lot of work in the last couple of weeks to make sure we are open for business in London, in Peterborough, in Edinburgh, and in Belfast. And, you know, as I name those cities, people will be thinking about the local lockdowns in all those areas. But, you know, nothing so far has stopped people actually going into a workplace. And whilst, you know, the vast majority of our staff on most days will be working from home and being supported to do so, you know, it's great that actually we can have that sort of safety valve available for people to be able to use, you know, for whatever reason if they need it. And the other flip side of this, of course, is that the vast majority of us will be spending, you know, a longer period of time working from home. So, you know, we just are every week we are thinking more and more about sort of mental health, well-being, working rhythms. I've just done a video today encouraging people as the clocks are about to go back to sort of take time off in the middle of the day and get outside and get some fresh air and daylight, because you could find yourself working, you know, starting work in the dark and finishing work in the dark at home and never seeing, you know, any daylight. I've just taken my dog for a walk at lunchtime, actually. So, you know, we're responding, you know, every week, actually, to the realities of how life is now a bit restricted and trying to have some, I'd say, a bit of fun with it. We're trying to put a bit of structure around it. We're just thinking about using November as a month to do some sort of physical and mental health type activities, you know, sharing advice on exercise or diet, you know, those sorts of ideas. And then we're building quite a big program for December, you know, around Christmas, clearly. But, you know, and it's not an internal thing, clearly, it's for our beneficiaries too, but actually internally, you know, trying to use Christmas as have a bit of sort of fun and excitement and inject some energy again into the organisation. So I think any employer, you know, is thinking very, very well to keep the workforce supported, you know, motivated, and having access to the appropriate equipment and being able to have that safety valve of a sort of office. And, you know, it's something we look at every week, you know, clearly, because, you know, it doesn't go away from week to week. And the goalposts move by government every week. And so we need to respond to that. So, yeah, it's an integral part of our job at the moment in managing the organisation.
Quite a job, I imagine. Matt Stringer, as always, great to talk to you here on RNIB Connect Radio. Thank you for your time once again.
No, thank you, Stephen. Nice to be here.